This project is unlocking a $1 trillion opportunity in Bitcoin, and everyone is still sleeping on it.
Today, we have a very special guest on our show. It is Rich Rhines, one of the initial contributors to CoreDAO. And in today's episode, he's going to reveal everything.
Welcome to the Beanpod. This is your place for all things stocks and crypto. From beginner tips to expert picks, use this as fuel for your investing journey, because when you're in the know, your money will grow.
This episode of the Beanpod is sponsored by BitGet.
BitGet is the most user-friendly and secure crypto trading platform for both beginners and experienced traders.
BitGet is the best place to not only trade Bitcoin and Ethereum, but also all the small cap gems that we discuss every day.
With 24/7 customer support, leveraged trading, and a wide array of other advanced features, BitGet sets itself apart from every other centralized exchange.
Through Beanstalk's official partnership with BitGet, you'll receive 15% off all trading fees when you sign up using the referral link in the description.
All views expressed by speakers on the Beanpod are solely their opinions. You should not treat any opinion expressed on the Beanpod as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a specific strategy, but only as an expression of their opinion. This podcast is for informational purposes only.
Welcome to the Beanpod. This is Shane, aka Jolly Green Investor.
And this is Josh, the Nifty Investor.
Today, we're going to be talking about a project that is unlocking a $1 trillion opportunity in Bitcoin, but everyone is sleeping on it.
Today, we have the initial contributor to CoreDAO, Rich Rhines. Welcome to the show.
Super excited to be here. Looking forward to chatting.
Excellent. So we are currently witnessing something truly historic with Bitcoin and the crypto markets at that. And that it stems from Donald Trump getting elected, and he is so pro crypto. So as someone who is building the platform that is ripe for institutional adoption, what is the mood like behind the scenes at CoreDAO?
So in general, the core opinion has been for increasing regulatory clarity everywhere, not just the US. But I think the US has largely been seen historically as the leader in crypto. Over the last few years, that's really shifted, right? We've seen the rise of Asia, we've seen the rise of some spots in Europe, and it really has changed. However, I think with Trump coming back in office with hopefully a stablecoin bill in the first 2 years, and then maybe a market microstructure bill sometime during his tenure, crypto should be back in the US. And I think at a minimum, you're looking at 4 years of less regulation by enforcement like we saw under the Biden administration, or outright trying to go kill crypto, which is very, very good for the space. And this is really what crypto needed to flourish in the US and then hopefully throughout the entire world.
Yeah, it's interesting. And especially because CoreDAO is, you know, what we've seen so far in this bull run and even with the whole Donald Trump thing is it's very Bitcoin focused. We've seen with the ETFs and institutions, and CoreDAO is one of those few projects that is synonymous with Bitcoin because it's, you know, helping with Bitcoin. That's why I said at the start of the show, Bitcoin, $1 trillion opportunity, it's CoreDAO. So maybe you can give us some insight into, you know, we said you're one of the earliest contributors to CoreDAO. What was the kind of story behind the initial creation of CoreDAO, and take us back?
Yeah, so Core was really birthed out of reflection on a few things, one of which was the 2017 and then 2020 cycle, where there was this insiders versus outsiders dynamic, where many of the projects were really centralized. And centralized meaning that they were really trying to, one, not only just internalize a lot of the token supply amongst themselves and their investors, but also that they were favoring scalability over forms of decentralization. And at the time, there was kind of this, you know, internal debate around how do we get back to the, you know, essentially like the first principles of crypto, which is decentralization first. And that's what first got me into Bitcoin back in 2013. And that's what got, you know, several of the other initial contributors into crypto was all Bitcoin. But we had more or less lost our way. However, if you went through it, you also saw a lot of good stuff had happened since, you know, 2013, right? You had the rise of Ethereum, then you had the rise of Solana, these interesting smart contract platforms. And that was kind of the genesis of this fight between an Ethereum maxi and a Bitcoin maxi, of which Core was born. And the idea was, how do you take kind of the best of all of these pieces, put it together, and go use it to scale Bitcoin? And that was really the genesis of the project. And since then, we've come a long way. And also this narrative has become popular, which I think is one of the healthiest things for the crypto space overall, is people getting back to the roots of what it means to be scaling crypto and to try to find interesting and novel solutions. Ultimately, that all comes back to Bitcoin. And as you mentioned, it corresponds with Bitcoin. It's not only the largest Bitcoin EVM ecosystem, or the Bitcoin retail chain, as some call it, with about a billion in TVL and hundreds of thousands of daily active users, but also has a Bitcoin yield product that has hundreds of millions in TVL in it. And then finally, it has, you know, 75% of the Bitcoin hash rate currently securing it. So when it came to Bitcoin alignment and kind of being well positioned for this recent cycle, Core is really in a good spot.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've been watching Core now for the better half of the year, and it is that beautiful synergy of everything that Bitcoin brings to the table, but a lot of the really neat financial aspects that Ethereum can also bring to the table for the DeFi side of things. And you mentioned Ethereum and Solana there in your previous little statement. And I just really think, like, anytime that I think of DeFi or our listeners, it seems like people are drawn to Ethereum and maybe Solana. Can you express maybe like why Bitcoin hasn't necessarily taken off in that regard? And what is Core DAO doing to change that?
I think the reality is that most Bitcoin holders miss DeFi. And that's something that is not like a hidden secret, but I don't think it's something that a lot of Bitcoiners want to admit. And one of the reasons they, you know, were taking that viewpoint was because they were Bitcoin maxis. And, you know, I was a Bitcoin maxi at one point as well. And I view my Bitcoin as a sacred asset in ways that I don't view Ethereum. And I think that's a pretty common viewpoint. But I think with that, many of these Bitcoiners also have hindsight, which is better than 2020 in this case, because they missed out on not only the great yield opportunities and everything else, but also the hacks and a lot of the nonsense that we saw in the Ethereum ecosystem during that time period, like yield farming and everything else, which is very antithetical to a lot of what Bitcoiners stand for. So again, there's pros and cons to having participated and having been on the sidelines. Put that all in context with Bitcoin as the perfect collateral asset, right? It's the hardest money you've ever known. There's now almost $2 trillion of Bitcoin out there. It's a size matters game, and Bitcoin is going to be the dominant asset by TVL within the next few years. Like, just based on numbers, it's pretty hard to see Ethereum winning that overall. But I would say there are some structural pieces that we're still overcoming as a Bitcoin community. The first is the very large part of Bitcoiners still aren't ready to do anything with their Bitcoin, and that's actually totally okay. There's another large section of Bitcoiners who aren't ready to bridge over, participate in DeFi yet. And that's where Bitcoin staking comes in. And that's why Core brought that to market in early April of this year, because you need a way to earn passive yield to start to put your Bitcoin to work, to make it a productive asset without dealing with bridge risk. And the way that Core does that, it's fully non-custodial. It's your keys the entire time. The only risk that you have is just liquidity risk, meaning you can't sell your Bitcoin if you're also staking it. There's now a 1-day minimum staking period after the Fusion upgrade. So arguably there is no risk associated with it. And then finally, there's another group of Bitcoiners that are ready to come over, right? They want to use Bitcoin LSTs, or they want to get involved in Bitcoin DeFi, but that's a small contingent today. I'd say on the high end, that's maybe 100 billion. On the low end, it's probably 10, 20 billion, right? So it's still a fat market by crypto standards, but it's not trillions there. We have to get there. If you combine the Bitcoin DeFi segment with the Bitcoin staking, now you're talking hundreds of billions, right? Like in today's potential TAM, tomorrow easily over a trillion. And what Core's job is to bring people along that curve, right? It's as people get comfortable with these different risks, these different trust assumptions, if they become comfortable, the idea is to have products that go meet those needs, but to meet them where they're at today, to help them get active in these ecosystems, to put their Bitcoin to work, and then hopefully, you know, mature down that curve as time goes along.
Yeah, that was the one thing that attracted Josh and I when we initially learned about Core DAO, you know, to get really simplify the project. It's like, this is the first project that allows non-custodial Bitcoin staking, right? And we knew how much of a game changer and how revolutionary that was the moment we learned about it. I remember that day, we're like, this is crazy, right? Mm. So I want to just ask you again, because that is, I think, for us, one of the coolest selling points of Core DAO. It's this innovative consensus algorithm, right? It's described, you guys have described it as the proof of stake layer for Bitcoin, enabling the first implementation of non-custodial Bitcoin staking while supporting a fully EVM compatible Bitcoin Fi ecosystem. So can you just maybe dive a little bit deeper into how this non-custodial staking works? And how is it different to existing models, and what else is out there?
So to take one step back, there's three ingredients in Core's consensus. There's Core staking, Bitcoin staking, and the hash power delegation. Each are three different ingredients in the soup that represents how validators get elected on Core. The 75% of the hash rate is currently securing it. There's thousands of Bitcoin and, you know, hundreds of millions in Core. So there's pretty robust amount of economic security that are already part of the system today, although we do expect to see it grow pretty materially. Focusing in on the Bitcoin staking aspect in particular, So how it works is it leverages Bitcoin's native time locks, which were introduced back in 2015. So it's very, you know, ossified technology's point, like most of Bitcoin is. And how it works is you time lock it to yourself. And in that time lock transaction, you say, here's the validator on core I want the Bitcoin to be delegated to. And then here's where I want to receive my reward tokens on the core chain. Those are the two data points that you provide as part of it. And then you set it and forget it until that, you know, time lock expires. And you can roll it, you know, as frequently as you want. You can change it to other delegators, right? You have all those options. But critically, you're never trusting anybody else with your Bitcoin, right? You're just relying on the Bitcoin main chain itself. And that, to your point, was a total game changer. And having chatted with, you know, the CEOs of some of the large custodians that either have or will announce support for Core's Bitcoin staking soon, this was built by Bitcoiners for Bitcoiners. And we win a lot of points on that because we appreciate, and again, we wouldn't do these other protocols with our own Bitcoin. And that's kind of the litmus test, right? Like, where would you trust your own funds? And Core is the only protocol that lives up to that muster. And we recently announced as part of, or recently went live with the Fusion upgrade. And the Fusion upgrade is what brought Bitcoin staking to quote unquote the next level. So now you can just stake your Bitcoin and you'll earn a rate, and that is never going away. But if you stake increasing amounts of Core alongside of that Bitcoin, you now actually can earn additional rewards on top of it, which bumps up those APYs. And for some people, they say, okay, this is just a way to, like, you know, make the rewards better wherever else. But that's actually not the long-term goal here. I mean, it's a nice benefit, helps the sustainability and that sort of thing. But the long-term goal here is to blend the Core community and the Bitcoin community, because that's how Core wins overall. And how it becomes the proof of stake layer for Bitcoin that other folks can build on top of is by blending these two communities, not just on a security sharing basis, which has been there historically, but now on a capital basis. And, like, to just take one more zoom in on, like, applying that, if you think of how most Bitcoiners are approaching some of these more yield opportunities in the Bitcoin ecosystem, what they're doing is they're just taking these rewards, they're farming them, they're dumping them, right? Like, they don't view these as something that they want to hold that have value. Well, with dual staking, what we're doing is we're giving them actually incentives to participate in the Core ecosystem. And this is how you start that process. And we've actually seen this with some of the mining pools that have been securing the Core chain since Genesis. Now they're actually taking a piece of those rewards and staking against their Bitcoin treasuries, right? Where they're getting more flexibility with how they approach their own capital requirements. And you're going to see this long term, as this is how you build a sustainable yield product over time, is you have to not only have the trust assumptions, but you also have to have these supply and demand levers that make sense. And as I would be remiss not to say on a podcast such as this, if you can't easily go into these systems, understand where the yield works or how the whole system works, where the yield comes from, you yourself are the yield. And that's never a spot you want to be in, particularly in bull market.
Yeah, it's very fascinating the way you bring that up. And it's like the mindset of a Bitcoin maxi and the mindset of maybe somebody who's more pertained to the Ethereum and DeFi side of things. Core's TVL has skyrocketed lately. So we want to get into a little bit of the numbers here, going from $3 million to nearly $820 million in 2024. That is a staggering 15,000% increase. That's absolutely staggering. So this surge highlights Core's role in unlocking new possibilities for Bitcoin and DeFi. What are you attributing this growth to? Where do you see it headed? What are you striving for?
All the credit goes to the builders in the Core ecosystem. I mean, the Core team plays a small role, but what I would say is Core takes a very different approach to partnerships than most chains do. Most chains just do these kind of grant shopping approaches where they just try to buy teams for, you know, some period of time. And it's really just this weird kind of lose-lose situation that most of these chains get into. And Core takes a very different approach. We have this incentive program called Ignition that's been live since earlier this year. And the idea is it rewards the users and the builders on the builder side for the TVL, for the usage, like for the actual value they're bringing to the chain. Are they actually having to drive platform revenues with the work that they're doing, which is really critical? And by doing that, we've been able to forge some really long-term relationships with Core native builders. And that's critical to the success of an ecosystem. We all love multi-chain experiences, familiar brands all over the place. However, you need Core native builders or native builders in your ecosystem to really break out. And Core is now at the fortunate spot where some of these native builders have actually made it all the way to their exchange listings, et cetera, which is a big step in kind of the maturity of the ecosystem. You're just seeing some 22 cycle projects like Aptos and Sui kind of hit this mark. So Core's about a year ahead of some of its competitors. From there, it comes down to, okay, get these amazing builders. Do you actually have products that people want to use? Is there product market fit? And that's another where Core really sets itself apart. They're really great builders, amazing products, and then a very large user base. And we talked very briefly about this at the beginning, but Core did a fair launch to start, which is very rare. Now you've seen Hyperliquid and some of these folks, you know, kind of do some similar things, which is great. And as part of these, you know, fair launches, you have the opportunity to build a really big community. And that's what Core did. It wanted to be Bitcoin aligned. Bitcoin was a fair launch, right? How do we try to do maybe the 2023 version of that to try to build a really healthy community? And now there's like something like 8 million Core holders, last I checked. There's so many people out there that are familiar with the ecosystem that are participating. And that creates both sides of the supply demand marketplace, if you will. So as a builder, you now not only have the ability to, you know, find TBL and to build a great product, but you also have users, right? You have the ability to complete the loop. And if you look at, you know, maybe some of these other Bitcoin scaling solutions or maybe some Ethereum L2s, you go in there and you see they're mostly ghost chains, right? Like there's very little actual work being done on those. So as a builder, it's so hard to be attracted to those, right? Like, yeah, maybe you can, you know, juice your TGE with some, you know, TVL buying or whatever else, but you're not actually gonna be able to build a real business. You won't be able to sustain that over the long run. And because we've taken, you know, quote unquote, the hard route to go do these things, we've actually wound up with a pretty self-sustaining ecosystem that we think will have an even bigger year in 2025 as Core really continues to fill that role as the Bitcoin consumer chain.
Right. Yeah. We like the sounds of, you know, sustainable ecosystem, real business model, long-term outlook. That's the kind of projects that we always talk about on this show. And there's no doubt that the numbers are impressive. However, I will say, you know, most people that watch this show, of course, they're looking to make money. Now, when we see the Core DAO, the metrics, you know, increasing so much, whether it be the TVL, the unique addresses, the percent of Bitcoin hash power delegated to Core, the daily transactions, everything is so impressive. Plus, you see the price of Bitcoin appreciating so impressively throughout the year of 2024. Then we see the Core token, and, you know, there's been some movement lately, but what you're seeing is a massive lag effect. So, in your opinion, is this just what happens in crypto? There is a massive lag effect between the increase in the metrics, the TVL, all that, and then the price of the token? Or is it just a lag effect between altcoins and Bitcoin? Or maybe you can shed some light in your opinion on what's the differentiation here between the Core token or tokens like it lagging behind their metrics and the price of Bitcoin?
So let me talk generally about like maybe tokens that are viewed as like higher beta Bitcoin type assets, of which, you know, Core is just one of many, and also about the market cycle. So I think what we saw this time was a big pull forward. And we saw a big pull forward because Trump is viewed as enormously bullish for Bitcoin. And we skipped the entire 80s, effectively, right? Went from like 80,000 to 88 or 89,000 in a day. Like that was just total euphoria, really, really wild. But we pulled a lot of those things forward. And historically, what you would see is Bitcoin would get a lot of flows that would then maybe go into ETH, and then you'd rally into alts. However, this is a structurally different buyer, right? You have the ETFs, you have these nation states potentially, you have these strategics and these corporations. These are different flows. These are not going to go from Bitcoin into many other assets, right? Or if they do, it's going to be on an even further lag, right? If you think about what Wall Street or most corporates know, they know about Bitcoin, maybe they've heard of Ethereum, but they don't really take it seriously or in the same category as Bitcoin today. Although to the ETH people's credit, you know, it is nice to see some flows recently, and maybe we'll get some ETH staking ETFs that will open up some of these other opportunities for Solana and, you know, some other chains going forward. But I think the first, you know, major piece of that to kind of summarize is this cycle is structurally different. I'd say the second thing is we've also seen just a dispersion in terms of how coins have reacted in previous cycles. Like I remember 2017 or 2021, everything kind of went up and down in unison, right? It was like, oh, it's a bull day, everything's up 10%. Oh, it's a down day, everything's down 15%, right? And you just saw everything kind of move together. You look at the top 100 right now, it's very different, right? Different narratives are catching bid every day. You had kind of a meme rotation, you had a dino rotation. Like you'll keep seeing kind of these things, you know, go on and off in a new way, which I think is actually exciting. I don't, you know, really trade crypto anymore, but back in the day, you know, I did run a little crypto fund for a while. So it is interesting to watch from like an intellectual perspective, kind of rounding it back to Bitcoin and some of these other tokens. I think as part of this, like we will get an alt season. I don't think that's hard to expect, but I do think this cycle will be a big separation of kind of real projects versus everything catching a bid. And that is, I think, net good for the space. Like the business of just launching tokens for the sake of launching tokens, I hope is dead. And the idea of all of the value being captured in private markets, I also hope is dead, because I think that is, you know, a net worse spot than we were maybe even in 2017 with ICOs. But I think you will see these, you know, hopefully flight to quality assets. And I think things that are looked as high beta Bitcoin will continue to hopefully do well this cycle, because it's very in line with the narrative, not just for this cycle, but hopefully for the next several, as Bitcoin will continue to dominate. I think we might even get to a point soon where Bitcoin is looked at separately than other crypto assets, because it's just so massive relative to the rest of the entire market.
Yeah, something that we like to do on this show is be early to narratives, because we understand that it changes week by week, day by day, month by month. But we do see that Bitcoin is here to stay, and we do see that a lot of this momentum is institutional driven. So with regulations coming into the US, a little bit more clarity, maybe we should be discussing some of these institutional partnerships. We see that you had a recent collaboration with Valour. Maybe you could tell us a little bit more about what that means for Core.
Yeah, so Valour and its parent DeFi Technology have been partners with Core since we launched the first yield-bearing ETP in April early this year. It was a world-first product, and that was the beginning of the institutionalization of Bitcoin yield. And this was, not only do we bring, you know, this to market as the first time, but we've also now had the first institutional product behind it. And I've made it no secret on podcasts and some news pieces that have come out over the last couple months, Core wants to power the yield in the Bitcoin ETFs. I think that's a when, not an if that happens. I think there's potentially hundreds of billions of Bitcoin at that point that will get powered in this. And I think Wall Street will be craving Bitcoin yield. You're already seeing Saylor talk about Bitcoin yield. It's a big change of tune from where he was even just a little bit ago. And I think it's a really interesting narrative for the space. And I think all these corporates that are going to wind up with Bitcoin, or even sovereigns of the Bitcoin, they're going to want yield. You don't just stop at spot. You get to derivatives. You want yield on top of it. Core is here to go power that. And recently, we actually announced a deepening of the relationship beyond just the Core ETP and the yield-bearing ETP, but also the first micro strategy for Core called CoreFi. And that will go live early next year up in Canada. We're super excited about that, because Core is going to be the smallest asset by far in terms of market cap that has any sort of levered acquisition vehicle. And what we've seen is the MicroStrategy play is essentially an arbitrage that allows you to access, you know, public market liquidity. And that should be very healthy for this dual staking narrative, right? Now it gives you this public vehicle where if you don't necessarily want to get involved in crypto assets directly, and you want access to, you know, some sort of premium on the Core token via public markets, you can then go access it in, you know, your traditional brokerage account. And that's a huge unlock, and there'll be some other interesting offshoots that come out of CoreFi. But it's a really momentous kind of occasion for the project, and also just something very difficult to replicate. I mean, I think that's one of the reasons, and you summarized it really well when you talked about, like, kind of, you know, like why you like to talk to projects like Core. Core's trying to be around for decades, right? It's not talking about cycles or years here. The goal here is to be super credible and to build something over the long term. It's partnerships like this that will allow us to continue to grow and get access to totally new investor bases.
Yeah, I like it. So you just mentioned something about dual staking. And when you go to the Core DAO socials, your website and stuff, we see announcements about this recent launch of dual staking. So is this something, you know, you just talked about the CoreFi thing happening in Canada. Is that dual staking? Tell us about dual staking and what it means for the CoreDAO ecosystem.
So dual staking came out as part of the Fusion upgrade about 2 weeks ago now. So it's still fairly new. But the idea was to help create what we have been talking about, Bitcoin alignment, since, you know, the beginning of the network. And the idea here is opening up additional yield opportunities for Bitcoin holders. And if we think about that continuum that I mentioned at the beginning of Bitcoiners who want to do nothing, to Bitcoiners who want to stake, to Bitcoiners who want to go participate in DeFi, you can actually subdivide that staking group now into different sections. One is groups that just want to go stake their Bitcoin. And again, that's totally fine. They'll always be able to do that. The rate will just be a little bit lower. But now if you want to stake increasing amounts of Core, you can actually go get higher yields. And what's nice about that is that's kind of this gap bridging in between. It's not getting you bridging over into DeFi and go participating in, you know, perp protocols or something else, which you're of course free to do. But the idea here is now you're actually taking on a little bit of principal risk, if you will, because now you have to actually reinvest those Core tokens that you might have either acquired or used as or got as yield from your Bitcoin. But now you can go get higher yields on top of it. And And this is not only important just for the blending of the two communities, but it's also how we get these folks involved in governance. And it's how we get them more and more comfortable for when they're eventually ready to go get into the Bitcoin ecosystem. And we've had many, many conversations, you know, over the last few months talking about the sustainability of Core's yield and how we go out there and, you know, try to create a system that's around for the long run. And we've been very open from the very beginning. Core has an 81-year emissions curve. It's designed to be the second block reward for Bitcoin, this durable yield, this POS layer for Bitcoin. But in order to really get that message home, the key was dual staking, because people needed to see additional supply and demand levers. Like, the ecosystem providing a lot of value is something that people understand natively looking at Solana or many of the other, you know, L1s. But you needed to have these other participants that now don't really have that same option to just be passive, right? If they want to go earn those high yields. So it creates this really nice reflexive loop. And it's been really great for our custodians, many funds that are going to get involved, et cetera.
Yeah. So for people who don't know, there is over 8,000 Bitcoin currently being staked non-custodially, which is worth somewhere around $800 million. So this, I believe, truly shows the value that Core brings to the table for Bitcoin holders. And it would be nice, we will eventually see that number continue to increase. It's unlocking new opportunities for Bitcoin yield. So what would you describe are these opportunities? So for somebody like me, let's say I stake my Bitcoin and I'm getting the yield. Now what can I do? Like, maybe walk us through this.
So you now have an option between just staking or coming on chain with staked Bitcoin in the form of these LSTs. And this is something you're going to see, like, it's already become a little bit of a narrative, but I think it's going to be a big narrative next year, is, again, kind of replicating a little bit of what we saw in the Ethereum ecosystem with STE, where STE dominated ETH. And the reason it dominated is it's strictly better from a utility point of view. Obviously, there's some risk assumptions, but most people trust Lido, good or bad. Take that not as financial advice. But the idea is, if you're going to have a wrapped Bitcoin, whatever, why not have a yield-bearing wrapped Bitcoin? And all yield-bearing wrapped Bitcoins are not the same. You have to understand the trust assumptions. If there's a custodian involved, like, there's a lot of pieces that kind of come down there. And then, of course, the yield. And when you look at it, this is also where dual staking comes into place, because these LSTs that want Core yield or get the highest yield will also be dual stakers. They will also be participants in the Core economy, which is really important, again, for the durability and allowing these LSTs to scale further and further, right? It's not just, hey, let me go take 100,000 Bitcoin and ramp it into these LSTs. The yield will be 0.001%. It's not interesting, right? Like, you might as well just have wrapped Bitcoin, right? And maybe you'll get better trust assumptions if you go the fully decentralized Bitcoin versus a wrapped Bitcoin or whatever that has, you know, all these custodians in the middle, whatever. So there will be, like, a big differentiation on that relatively soon. I'd say by Q1, you'll see a pretty big dispersion in the yields in these LSTs. But the reason I give all that background is, now you've got your Bitcoin, you're willing to bring it over in the form of one of these LSTs. Now you can enter the Core ecosystem with many different opportunities. Do you want to have, you know, a lower risk opportunity, like a borrow lend? You can go to co-lend. Do you want to restake it? You can go take that and put that in Pell Network. And now you're powering a system of, you know, ABSs around. A little bit more risk than just a borrow lend, but relatively marginal. Or do you want to bring it into NLX, use this collateral to go perps trading, right? Now you're getting into leverage, right? But the idea is to have all of kind of the familiar faces of DeFi, if you will, that are all Bitcoin backed. And that's so critical, because it's such a better collateral asset. And then if you want to get involved with, you know, other more esoteric things, there's all sorts of different, you know, meme coin launch pads and a bunch of GameFi and things like that that are all on top of Core. But I think there's just so many pieces right there. And the other big one that I'm super, super excited about are these Bitcoin-backed stables. And I think the reason I get so excited about Bitcoin-backed stables is I view it really is one of the original OG Bitcoin use cases, which is, you've got all this Bitcoin, you essentially want to take out, like, a really low LTV loan, and you want to get leverage in the form of dollars or stable coins. And I think we're going to see one of these protocols, hopefully, be the first $1 billion protocol on top of Core sometime in 2025, 2026, because there's just so much demand for Bitcoin holders for leverage. But it needs to be safe, it needs to have the right risk parameters, it might not need a token, which already gets rid of a lot of builders, right? Like, there's a lot of pieces to kind of think about there. But I think that's another big difference of how, you know, many Core builders approach things. They're trying to do stuff that maybe can survive without tokens potentially. And that's a very different way to look at it. And that's where the user base and ability to really generate a real business are big differentiators. But come over to Core, check it out, earn some ignition points, and go, you know, play with amazing protocols.
Yeah, I like it. I mean, a lot of our community is familiar with Core, CoreDAO, the whole ecosystem, because Josh and I have been doing a good job of covering the project over the last year. I know a lot of people in our community are holders of the Core token. So you kind of just described a lot of the things you can do with the Core token briefly there. So what would you say is the reason for people to hold the Core token now? And moving forward, is there any increased utility that you can tell us about?
So Core will continue to try to find more and more ways to give Core holders additional utility. And a good example of this is dual staking, right? Like prior, if you were just a Bitcoin holder, like you had no other reason to participate if you wanted to participate passively through Bitcoin staking. But by doing that, you now as a Core community member also benefit from this Bitcoin staking that's going on in a different way. It's more bi-directional versus unidirectional. You're gonna see some interesting things on governance. I won't give the full thing now, but there'll be some interesting new governance changes that'll get posted on the forum soon that will also largely benefit Core holders. And we'll continue to find more and more ways to go do that. I'm sure new ideas will come from the community, but the goal here is to continue to find new and innovative ways to benefit Core holders. And part of that is, you know, network utilities themselves. Others are actually platform improvements like local fee markets, revenue redistribution, different protocols, et cetera.
Yeah, look, we are firm believers in what Core DAO is attempting to do, how you guys are changing the game. Jolly and I, we both have our Core staked. We should possibly look at staking our Bitcoin as well, if you're holding any. But now is the time of the show where we'd like to put our hype hat on. And this is an opportunity for you to, you know, let the audience members know, let people who are either holding Core or not holding Core and probably should be holding Core.
Not financial advice.
Yeah. But, you know, get us amped. Like, what's coming over the next 3 to 6 months or a year from now that would really get us jazzed up?
So I think, and again, like 2024 was a big year, right? Like you gave some of the stats early in the pod and that was amazing. 2025 should be even bigger. And I think you're going to see this Core retail chain or consumer chain really continue to build from a narrative point of view. And what that means is more product market fit, more scale, more amazing applications. There's never going to be a better time to be an active participant in the Core network. And that will be a guiding light for the entirety of the core ecosystem. Is it's not just about passive TVL, it's about real yield opportunities, it's about real value that you can deliver, real products. And you're going to see kind of a whole new wave of flagship protocols, et cetera, launch. So we're super excited about that. And I think you'll see some pretty amazing usage numbers, even by the end of 2024, comparable to all chains, not just Bitcoin chains. On the other side, you're going to see some really interesting institutional pieces come on board. And what I mean by that is Core is in a very unique place where it now has a two-year track record. Again, the token went live in early 2023. Most of these other Bitcoin chains haven't even launched yet. So there's still a lot of work to be done there. And that goes a long way for the institutional mind share and really getting, you know, some of these pieces in place. So you're going to see broad-based access to most major custodians. You're going to see Bitcoin staking in many of these custodians. You're going to see some funds that are, you know, actively and openly participating in dual staking. And hopefully we'll be able to nail more additional, you know, ETPs, et cetera. Maybe some ETFs. We'll see how some of these things play out and, you know, other regions that are outside the US. But you're going to see a big institutional push. And that's one of the reasons that Core has such a broad mandate is each one of these can be a massive, you know, standalone business amongst itself. But if you combine all of these pieces together, you can build something really special. And that's always been Core's goal. It's not just to be number one in every Bitcoin category, which we happily are today, but it's to build, you know, the next great L1 and ultimately to be that POS layer on top of Bitcoin.
Love it. I mean, look, we were already extremely bullish on Core before this show, but now that you've been able to provide us behind the scenes insight into what Core has been able to accomplish already and what they have moving forward for 2025 and beyond, I think it's safe to say we are even more bullish. So yeah, look, Rich, thank you very much for coming on the show and providing us a look into just what you guys are building over at CoreDAO.
Awesome to chat. Looking forward to doing it again soon.
Cheers. Hey, make sure you guys tune into the next episode.
That one is going to be a banger.
All views expressed by speakers on the Beanpod are solely their opinions. You should not treat any opinion expressed on the Beanpod as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a specific strategy, but only as an expression of their opinion. This podcast is for informational purposes only.